Welcome to Optometric Quarterly 86. I'm Jeff Watts, and in this edition of OQ, we have interviews on child vision screening and the treatment of diabetic maculopathy with Lucentis, and a review of several iPad apps for optometry. In the quarterly review, Jeff Robison looks at papers on cerebrospinal fluid and normal tension glaucoma, ethnic variations in refractive error, and scanning laser ophthalmoscopy and OHT. The Docket website at www.docket.info, which features an archive of current and past editions of Optometric Quarterly, is now mobile optimized for Apple, Windows, and Android smartphones and tablets. You can also download Optometric Quarterly to your iPhone or iPad using the free Docket OQ app, which can be found by searching Docket in the iTunes store. We're always keen to hear listeners' views on the program and to receive topic recommendations for future editions of OQ. To do this, simply follow the links on the web pages or the app. Alternatively, email inquiries@docket.info. Our first interview is on the use of Lucentis to treat diabetic maculopathy. Previously used to treat wet AMD, Lucentis has recently been approved by NICE for this further application. Dr. Claire Bailey is a consultant ophthalmologist and clinical director of the Retinal Treatment and Research Unit at Bristol Eye Hospital and has been involved in the Royal College of Ophthalmologists' guidelines for both age-related macular degeneration and diabetic retinopathy. Here, she talks to Fiona Gray about diabetic maculopathy and the prospects for its management with this new treatment option.
Claire, can you remind us of the macular-related complications that can arise from diabetes?
Well, diabetic maculopathy is a result of the changes that occur due to chronic diabetes in the capillaries, both deep and superficial, in the macular area. With chronic diabetes, the chronically raised glucose levels result in increased oxidative stress in cells in the body. You get production of advanced glycation end products, activation of mediators such as protein kinase C, increased viscosity of the blood, and reduced red cell deformability. If you look at what's happening in the capillaries in the retina, there's thickening of the basement membrane, degeneration of the pericytes, which are the small cells on the outside of the capillaries, and also proliferation of the endothelial cells, and ultimately degeneration of the endothelial cells. All of this after many years of chronically raised glucose results in vascular rigidity and leakage, and this gives rise to the edema, the fluid that occurs in the macular area with diabetic maculopathy. You also get closure of capillaries as a result of chronic diabetes. That can give rise to macular ischemia, where the capillaries are no longer patent and no longer bringing blood into the macular area. And that can cause problems that are difficult to treat, which don't respond to treatment.
Diabetic maculopathy has previously been controlled with laser treatment. Can you explain how this works?
Well, that's a very interesting question because actually the exact mechanism of action of diabetic macular laser has been poorly understood. The ultimate effect of macular laser has been to help reduce edema, and it's thought this happens by helping the eye to pump more fluid out of the retina, but also by helping to restore the integrity of the capillary walls, i.e. reducing permeability. Macular laser has been delivered by very gently focally lasering areas of capillary leakage, usually aiming at the little microaneurysms that are the focal source of leakage, but also lasering very gently in a grid manner to areas of diffuse capillary leakage.
And what are the limitations of laser treatment?
Well, I think one of the main limitations of laser is that it very rarely significantly improves vision. So where patients have got a lot of fluid affecting the centre of the retina, it's really poor at giving them a significant improvement in their quality of life. We know from clinical trials that were done many years ago, the ETDRS studies that were published in the 1980s, that laser treatment is effective at reducing moderate visual loss. So there's a 50% reduction in moderate visual loss in patients given laser compared to nothing, but actually very rarely does it improve vision. One of the other limitations of laser is that if the areas of leakage are very close to the fovea, then laser is best avoided because the laser burns can increase in size over time. And if you laser very close over the years, you can get atrophic changes centrally, and that gives its own problems and own visual loss subsequently.
Lucentis is an anti-VEGF drug. Can you explain what this means and how it works to manage diabetic maculopathy?
Vascular endothelial growth factor A is a major permeability and angiogenic factor in the eye. We know that this is upregulated significantly in patients with diabetic retinopathy, and Lucentis blocks all isoforms of vascular endothelial growth factor A. So when Lucentis is administered, this effectively significantly blocks the increased permeability that you get as a result of that and helps reduce the leakage in the eye. And that really is the mechanism of how it helps with diabetic macular edema. We know that Lucentis also has these anti-angiogenic effects, and it does, as an aside, have an effect on retinal neovascularization, but it's not primarily used for that purpose in the context of diabetic retinopathy, because panretinal photocoagulation can affect a permanent resolution of new vessels, and so that's what's the treatment of choice there.
What is the value of using an anti-VEGF drug such as Lucentis, and what are the long-term benefits?
Well, we know from some very well-conducted clinical trials that for patients where the fluid is affecting the centre of the retina, that there are significantly improved outcomes by using anti-VEGF treatment, Lucentis treatment, compared to laser. The type of magnitude of benefit would be at a year follow-up, with a number of injections given at monthly intervals, that you would be gaining over one line of logmar visual acuity compared to the laser alone group. It's very rare to get any significant improvement with laser alone. We know, though, that to get this magnitude of benefit, you do need to see patients for monthly follow-up, and quite a significant number of treatments need to be given over the first 4 to 6 months. So in most of the trials, patients were given about 6 or 7 injections on average in the first year. But that does reduce significantly come year 2 and 3. And in trials where there is 3-year follow-up, the mean number of treatments is around 3 in the third year. So the benefits are significant, particularly if patients are on the cusp of driving levels of vision, or if they're struggling to use their insulin syringes, and so it can be quite a significant benefit. But obviously one has to take into account the fact that without treatment, patients are not rapidly going blind. So it's a very different sort of situation than with wet macular degeneration, where without treatment their vision really, really goes down very rapidly.
Is Lucentis suitable for any patient suffering from diabetic maculopathy, or are there any contraindications?
Well, the data on Lucentis comes for patients who have centre-involving diabetic macular edema. So for patients where the visual acuity remains 6-6 and the edema is away from the centre of the retina, those would not be eyes that you would be using Lucentis in, and indeed you might choose still to laser those patients if appropriate. For patients where there's fluid affecting the centre of the retina with visual reduction, then the best evidence is to consider anti-VEGF treatment. Now, not every patient would be suitable, in the sense that patients who are pregnant or thinking about being pregnant definitely should not be undergoing anti-VEGF treatment, because these are very powerful drugs, and although they're given locally to the eye, we know a degree is absorbed systemically, and they could have very profound effects potentially on the developing fetus. In fact, they've never been tested in pregnant people, so that would be avoided. If a patient was completely needle phobic and unable in any way to tolerate the prospect of repeat intravitreal injections, that would clearly not be an advisable treatment as well. But beyond that, there really aren't any specific other contraindications. In the past, there's been a lot of monitoring looking at whether intravitreal anti-VEGF treatment can increase the risk of arteriothrombotic events, ATEs as they're known. And that's been very closely monitored with the large numbers of AMD patients that have been looked at over the years. And there doesn't seem to be any particular systemic concern in that regard. So I don't think that would be a contraindication. Clearly, diabetics have higher risk anyhow of macrovascular events. So that isn't fundamentally a contraindication.
If a patient is pregnant or hoping to become pregnant, would you delay the onset of Lucentis treatment or proceed with laser treatment?
It's a very good question. I think you'd have a long discussion with the patient about the likely duration of Lucentis treatment and the timing of any pregnancy they'd want to have. One thing you certainly wouldn't do is treat them with anti-VEGF treatment while they were pregnant or imminently thinking about becoming pregnant. So I think you might, for instance, if somebody had very severe macular edema, you might talk to them about delaying becoming pregnant until you'd got the edema under control. But the problem is that the treatment tends to be an ongoing monitoring, and then if you're then not able to treat for a period of time, their fluid may get worse. You certainly would be considering giving patients such as that laser if they were wanting to become pregnant pretty quickly.
There have been some recent NICE guidelines with regard to who is eligible for the treatment. Can you explain what these are?
Yes. Well, we're very pleased that NICE have agreed to fund Lucentis for a particular subgroup of patients with diabetic macular edema. It's not everybody that might clinically benefit from it, but it actually at least gives us access to treatment for potentially the most needy. What NICE have specified is a subgroup where the central retinal thickness on OCT is at least 400 microns. To give you an idea, if you're not familiar with the OCTs, 250 microns would be about the normal thickness. And so these are eyes that are significantly thickened, but indeed, many of those patients still have reasonably good vision. So it's not only allowing us to treat really the terribly advanced group. So we're very pleased to have this available. There's still the slightly tricky situation of patients who would clinically benefit, according to evidence and clinical guidelines, for whom we're not allowed to treat according to NICE guidelines. And for that group, we would either discuss with them about continuing with laser, which has been the current form of treatment, or potentially deferring treatment and waiting until they had a thick enough retina centrally to justify anti-VEGF treatment.
Do you foresee any implications for optometrists, such as patient monitoring or referral practices, if a patient is treated with Lucentis?
Well, very much so. I think, you know, around the UK, there have been very major developments in enhancing the role of optometrists in shared care work within hospital eye units. That happens a lot with our unit, but also I'm well aware around the country that happens as well. So for wet macular degeneration treatments, lots of optometrists are already involved in a shared care manner in assessing OCTs and helping to decide on treatment and retreatment decisions. And we certainly foresee that increasing with the advent of Lucentis treatment for diabetic macular edema. There are specific additional training aspects to do with monitoring diabetic retinopathy because one needs to be absolutely au fait with the grading schemes, etc. And I think the College of Optometrists are aware of this important area of development and are developing a specific medical retina module for optometrists, which is going to be developed over the next year or so.
Thanks, Claire and Fiona. References for further reading on the subject can be found on the OQ86 webpage at www.docket.info.